Hello, and welcome to the Equitopia podcast series, From the Horse's Mouth. My name is Caroline Hegarty, founder of Equitopia. Today I'm delighted to talk with Dr. Julianne Voss. Julianne has an impressive background. She started off her veterinary studies in Munich, Germany, and received her doctorate from the University of Zurich in Switzerland under the supervision of Professor Jorge Auer on the topic of computer-assisted surgery in axial distal phalanx fractures in horses. After working as a general practitioner for a number of years, she started questioning whether Western medicine had all of the answers, and she began to explore other avenues, which involved her training in veterinary acupuncture, osteopathy, myofascial release points, and other modalities. As usual, I began asking Julianne about when she got involved with horses.
Well, I grew up in Germany, and in Germany it's not very common to have horses of your own, just because of the lack of space we have here. So it's kind of become a girl thing that every little girl sooner or later wants to get in touch with horses. And that's kind of the age when it caught me too. And I lucked out because I found a place where I could actually learn how to ride in the little town I lived in, because my mom was refusing to drive me to riding lessons once or twice a week for half an hour or something. So this was a place where I could actually take my bike to get to, and that's how it all started out.
Awesome. I asked Julianne if there was something specific that made her realize she wanted to work with horses professionally.
In my last couple of years in high school, I took care of a senior horse. He was 22 when he came up lame in his left front, and it seemed like everybody in the barn had a smart remark about it, you know, how you just need to warm out of it, or when you're older, things just happen to be painful every once in a while, and just give him some rest and he'll be fine. And nobody really had any idea of what they were talking about. The owner was kind of hesitant to call out the vet. You know, she wanted to give him some time first, and I was really, really getting frustrated about this situation. So I complained to my ex-boyfriend about it, and he kind of looked at me and was like, well, why don't you go for vet school then? And I looked back at him and said, interesting idea. And a few days later, I was actually allowed to call the vet out and also talk to him about the idea of going to vet school. And he did something that was very unusual for him. He invited me to come and ride along with him for a while to see if this would fit me. And this was in my senior year, and I was preparing for my final exams and kind of pushing the date back and stuff. And my mom was starting to really get in my case to call him and fix a date and, you know, make sure this works out and stuff. And so basically, to avoid being annoyed by my mother any further, I called him and fixed the date, and it took me about 3 days riding along with him to know that this is what I want to do. So I tend to say that the decision's kind of based least on my own impulse of all of the decisions in my life, I want to say, but I never regretted it. It's been a great choice.
Sounds like the universe conspired for things to work out like that. I next asked Julianne to tell me about her experience when she was getting started, any challenges she faced.
Probably the biggest challenge for me at that time was that I looked really young, and it was really difficult to gain the trust of the owners. I remember one instance where I was sent from my ex-boss to a lameness exam the first time I was seeing this horse. And we started the exam walking out, walking back, trotting out, trotting back, and in mid-stride on her way back, the owner just stops dead and looks at me and is like, may I ask you how old you are? You look like you're 15. I was 27, I believe, at that time. So that probably was the biggest issue when I first started out that I had.
That is a really simple example of how our perceptions and preconceived notions can affect our decision-making. Julianne looked really young for her age, therefore people found it difficult to take her seriously, even though she was actually qualified and experienced. This is what's referred to in cognitive behavior therapy as thinking error, and it's more common than we think. We do it all the time. because when we repeatedly think something, it becomes a belief. And because we live our lives according to our beliefs, this thinking error can lead us to make poor judgments and decisions. Why not pause the podcast for a minute and think about some of the beliefs you have about your equestrianism? Are they serving you well? Where do these beliefs come from? Are they valid, or do you think it would be good to revisit them and see if they can be challenged? And back to Juliana. I asked her how she got interested in other approaches to horse care.
First interest in acupuncture actually came up when I first came out of high school. I had pretty severe dust allergies at that time. When I came home from the barn, I was pretty much out cold for about 2 hours until I recovered. And through some lucky coincidence, basically, I ended up getting acupuncture treatment for it. And it just took three treatments to really clear me of those allergies, and that really impressed me. I still decided to go to vet school first, went through vet school, did a couple of years working on the job just to, you know, really get a feel and a knowledge of what's going on. And then 2 years later, through another turn of fate, I had the chance to do the IVIS basic course in San Antonio in Texas. And through that, I met Kerry Ridgway. I've met him at a congress, and he gave a really interesting vet lab there on equine gastric ulcer syndrome. And then a year or two later, he was teaching a class in Germany about the myofascial acupuncture points he had found. And I attended that class, and it was really, really interesting. And the only thing was that there was 30 students, I believe, to two horses. And I felt I couldn't properly learn that technique in that type of setting. So after the course, I just went up to Kerry and asked him if I could just ride along with him at all, ever. And he's like, sure, whenever you have time, just give me a call and we'll make it work. So just 2 or 3 months later, I came down with this really freakish, scary disease where I got a fever every day around noon for like 10 weeks, and nobody ever found out what the reason for that was. But I lost my job over it. And when I had sort of recovered, I started looking for a new position and found one. And I was like, okay, I'm going to come, but only in 6 weeks from now. And I called Kerry and was like, can I come now? And he's like, sure, just book a flight. So that's what I ended up doing. Everybody was declaring me punch crazy because I still wasn't back to full strength. And, you know, why don't you rest out of it first? And then, no, I had to have it my way. And I flew to South Carolina. And that has really been a game changer for me. Just, you know, profiting from this man's incredible wealth of knowledge was just unreal. I was just so filled up with information in those 2 weeks. It just really, really turned my life. It just totally gave it a different direction. And then I went on starting to work with a acupuncture technique, and I had a number of people, especially from IVIS, telling me, you know, if you really want to focus on that, you have to have at least one additional manual technique you're using. So I went for some osteopathic training for a year, and that's basically what I'm doing now, is a lot of acupuncture and some osteopathic treatments. And besides that, I do give a lot of Western medical advice to people. I use it as an additional tool, even though I do refer people if I need x-rays or ultrasounds or any other Western medical diagnostics. But I do have a few colleagues that I can work with together very well, and that works out pretty good for both sides, I believe. So this is basically my path that I went, and just this past year I have agreed with Carrie's wife, Christine, that I'm kind of taking over his heritage, and she gave me access to his Facebook page. And yeah, we'll see where life takes me from here.
That's so interesting. I find it really inspiring to hear about Julianne's experience with Dr. Kerry Ridgway, dropping everything after an illness and funding her own travels to the other side of the world to tap into the knowledge and experience of someone she had so much professional admiration for. This shows real and genuine courage, passion, and conviction. Apart from book learning, mentorship is an excellent way to progress our education. Sometimes it's the only way to access the knowledge and experience that's walking around in people's heads, or what's termed tacit knowledge. I next asked Julianne if she believes interprofessional collaboration is important in caring for horses.
Yeah, I believe that collaboration of the various professionals working around horses is probably the most important factor in keeping a horse healthy and performing for a long time. You know, it's just no good if your horse's feet are fine, but the saddle doesn't fit, your back's still going to be a mess, and you're not going to have a healthy horse. At the same time, if your saddle fits perfectly and your feet are a disaster, you're not getting anywhere either. And even if you got everything else fixed perfectly and you're not doing a proper job in riding and training the horse, you're still going to ruin it on the long run. So I believe it's really, really important that everyone involved with equine health and training works together. So, absolutely, yes.
I asked Julianne to tell me about some of her challenges today.
My biggest problem right now is probably that I've developed this love for teaching, which obviously is a little difficult in these times. With the pandemic going on and stuff, I've really enjoyed teaching face-to-face to smaller groups and, you know, giving them some hands-on teaching as well. And some of it has been abroad, so with all the restrictions in place right now, it's just really difficult to get anywhere in that regard. And I've looked into online teaching a little bit, still trying to find a really good way for me to do that. But it's the lack of feedback you're getting from your participants is making it harder for me. And also not having the possibility to demonstrate something on a live horse hands-on to people is just something I really miss. So this is probably the biggest challenge to me right now, is to find a way to pass on knowledge without having to look people in the eye, basically, face to face. It's just difficult. I'm sure it's something that can be overcome, but it's a work in progress to me.
As we are in the middle of a pandemic, it has made so many people aware of the need for online education. But many, like Julianne, are still struggling to know how to actually do it in a way that will really benefit learners. Here at Equitopia, we have been developing courses for some time. And we do this using pedagogical methods that are specifically designed for online learning. We're actually in the process of developing a number of new courses that should be ready very soon. These include an exciting range of content formats, videos, animations, lectures, and so on, so that learners can really move forward in acquiring new knowledge. I asked Julianne if she has horses.
Actually, I don't have horses of my own. Like I said earlier, in Germany, the situation is in a way that I find it really difficult to find a place to keep a horse that's really fair to the horse. So I've never really seriously considered getting a horse of my own. I have two trained search and rescue dogs that keep me very busy with training my dogs and also all the other teams in the group that we're in. So no horses of my own. I just work with other people's horses.
This raises the question that concerns so many horse owners. What's the best way to keep horses? How do you know if your horse is boarded at the right place? What should you do if you can't find a way to keep a horse in a way that's fair to him or her? One of the many dilemmas we all face. I asked Julianne if she sees progress in the horse world and what that progress is.
I think the number of people is increasing who are really wanting to get to the bottom of things and trying to understand what's going on inside their horses and what they need to do and what they need to take care of to give it a healthy and long life without pain, without trouble. And a lot of people are not only looking into the big sports industry to get that orientation anymore. They're more looking for other trained professionals that work with horses on a more, I want to call it, normal basis. So not oriented towards big sports and making money, but really oriented towards what's best for the horse.
And what about things that still need to change?
I've noticed that a lot of people seem to have a wrong picture of what's right in their head. The reason for that, I believe, is in the way that horses have been ridden in the big sports business over the last years with hyperflexion and LDR and whatnot. And it's gotten to a point where people think that's the right posture a horse should be in when it's ridden, and that's just not right. So it's our job as professionals to change that. And the professionals that need to be involved in changing that include not only veterinarians, but also trainers and judges, physios, osteopaths, and pro riders, because these are the people that the average person is looking up to when they start getting involved with horses.
Absolutely. We need as many voices as possible to speak out for our horses, not just horse owners and equine professionals, but as Julianne says, judges need to use their influence as well as professional riders who can use their position to have a positive impact on horse welfare. I asked Julianne what she expects from the future of equestrianism.
Well, it all depends on where they decide to go, especially in the competitive field. We have more possibilities for research and for treatment than we ever had, so we have all the chances to make great lives and healthy lives for our horses, and I just hope we make good use of it.
As we are preparing a book list for equestrians based on all of the recommendations of people I am interviewing in the podcast, I asked Julianne to share three of her top picks.
Three books, that's a tricky one, because you probably want English language books as well. So let's see. One's Gerd Heuschmann's book, in German it's Finger in der Wunde. I believe the English translation for that is If Horses Could Speak. I feel that it gives a good idea on equine biomechanics and how things are connected in equine body and why hyperflexion or LDR type of riding is detrimental to the horse. Second, everything's in German. So what I would recommend, especially a new horse owner, is that they read anything they can get their hands on about crookedness, natural asymmetry in a horse, and how to deal with it. A very important issue, I feel. And then there's one that's not a book, but a DVD, but I feel that Manolo Mendez's DVD on in-hand work is really worth getting and watching, not only to understand biomechanics, but more so to understand that there is a kind way of working with a horse, and he demonstrates it perfectly well. And he's, in my eyes, he's the best example of a person that has really taken lifelong learning to heart, and also his ability to observe and read or understand what the horses tell him is just really amazing. So it's a good start for anyone who ever wants to work with horses.
Finally, I asked Julianne what she would be looking for in members of an equine team, starting off with the qualities she would look for in a good trainer.
I want to call it an empathic honesty with their students. We're seeing a lot of trouble here because many trainers know what's right to do, but they don't tell their students, because then they will lose their students and the students are just going to go somewhere else. So rather than telling them what the problem is, they're just given praise and go on the way it's heading anyways. And yes, honesty can be a pretty tough business every once in a while, but it's important that trainers agree on that more, so that the choice to just go somewhere else isn't really an option anymore for students.
What about qualities in veterinarians?
myself and my colleagues, I mostly expect grit and perseverance to really find out what's wrong in those tricky cases. You know, the easy cases, they're not a problem. If you just got a hoof abscess and you soak it for a couple of days, you cut it open and the thing's over and done with. But every once in a while, you get those really tricky cases where it's really difficult to find out what's wrong. And a lot of times you'll have a complex issue rather than just a monocausal something going on. And I miss that in some of my colleagues, that they're just, you know, they do their regular thing, and if they don't find anything, it's just behavioral, or it's, you know, nothing wrong with it. They just imagine it and whatever. I can't handle that approach. And another thing I would really like to see more of in the veterinary field is that people look more at the whole horse and not just at something that's broken.
And farriers?
What I miss in a lot of farriers, at least over here, and that's the only thing I can really speak for, is that a lot of times they're not very open to discussion. They want to do things their way, and especially in difficult cases, it can be really useful to get input from different sides and discuss and debate stuff to find the best outcome for the horse or for the specific case. So I wish a lot of farriers over here were a little more open to that, and I'm not saying that they have to do what I'm telling them to do. I just want to be able to discuss things with them and get their input and their reasoning behind why they would like to do one thing or another, while I maybe would go down a little bit of a different route, and then we can maybe find the best way together.
What about qualities in behaviorists?
For behaviorists, I think their most important ability has to be to observe not only the horses and what they're trying to tell us, but also the people that come with the horses, so to say. In the dog field, we tend to say that sometimes the problem's on the other end of the leash, and I see that in horses too, obviously, that, you know, for whatever reason, the owner or the handler of the horse can't find a way to properly communicate to the horse what they want, and the horse gets confused over it, and some horses react by, you know, just kind of freezing, and other horses react by freaking out. And I feel that it's very important to get the whole picture, not just of the horse, but of the entire team you're working with.
What about nutritionists?
I think that nutritionists have a really difficult job at these times, because we're kind of starting to get the knowledge how important and at the same time how diverse the gut works, not just in horses, but in all animal and people. The microbiome plays a huge role in that. So what I would expect of a nutritionist is to be as up to date as possible on the research in that field, and if possible, even supporting ongoing research in that field. It's a really complex and really difficult field right now, and I'm certain that there's not the one single perfect way to nourish a horse properly or feed a horse properly. It's an individual thing, so it makes things very complex and very difficult.
Indeed, it's an individual thing, and this applies to all aspects of horse care. Every horse is different, and there's no one-size-fits-all approach that will work 100% of the time. Before signing off, I just want to tell you about something new. You might be interested to know that we have just launched our Equitopia gift vouchers. You can find these on the website, and they can be used for any of our online courses. So if you're looking for something special for a horsey friend, why not give them the gift of knowledge? It will move us all forward towards a world of horses and humans in harmony. And with that, we have come to the end of another episode. I hope you enjoyed listening to Julianne, and I hope you'll tune in again next month for more from the Horse's Mouth.